Oh, that's right. It's time for the I Love Ann Show. Gosh, I've had a very nice privilege here this morning. I've been sitting here talking with the one, the only, Jim Bohannon.
I am. Yes, as a matter of fact, I think there's a law that there can only be one of me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think that we could stand more.
I don't think we could either.
That's right. That's right. So, gosh, it sure is nice to be sitting across instead of on a telephone line.
Well, it is. It's wonderful. Wonderful to see you, Ann. You're lovely as always.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. You're looking pretty damn good yourself.
I think you
do. So, gosh, I didn't get to hear the Bohannon Show last night or America in the Morning this morning, but yeah. I know a lot of people did.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we talked a bit last night about a bill coming up on Capitol Hill today to repeal the death tax or the estate tax, and talked with Kevin Cramer, the Republican congressman from North Dakota, about that. So.
Okay. Are they going to repeal it?
Oh, the House will, and the Senate will probably go along, and then the president will veto it, so that's the end of that. So.
It's amazing the trifecta we have going on, isn't it?
Hey, the public voted for the straight paralysis ticket. I mean, the people who split their vote like that, despite apparently having no point of view at all, they're probably the first people to whine about gridlock when they created it. I hope that in 2016 people make up their minds. But if you voted for a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Democratic president, you're not paying attention. So that would be nice. Would you please pay attention? Either way, at least vote consistently. It would be nice.
It would be nice. It would be nice.
Even if vote consistently against me, at least vote consistently.
Or how about this? Just get out and vote.
I'd take that, but right now I'm talking about the people who created the mess we're currently in.
Yeah, well, maybe if we had more people voting, too, right?
Maybe. It would be helpful. Please vote. Please look at the issues before you vote.
So here we are. We're up here with Fair. We're talking about immigration. And, of course, yesterday, right into the middle of on the Capitol lawn, what did we have? A helicopter fly-in.
That's what I heard about that. Well, I know it's tough to commute in this city, but that probably is not the approved way to beat the gridlock here.
and gosh, he was wanted to. What did he want to do?
He wants to try and highlight the need for campaign finance reform. What he has highlighted, I think, is the need for cheap defense lawyers in the nation's capital, because if he thinks he's getting off with a slap on the wrist, I doubt that very seriously. I think that the government will do everything in their power to make an example of this guy.
And, of course, did he fly from Florida up here?
No, as far as we know, he went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where apparently the Secret Service visited late yesterday and found a trailer. What he apparently did was drive his little gyrocopter up to Gettysburg and then had the fuel to fly, I guess, from there down here very low and just zoomed in. I mean, he was treetop level, and apparently nobody saw him coming in. I mean, if things had worked as they are supposed to work, he would have been shot down and killed, which frankly wouldn't have bothered me in the least. I guess you could say he performed a public service in pointing out how lousy our security is, but still, this guy is a hot dog who just wants attention, and boy, is he going to get a shovel full of attention, a lot more than he wants.
Well, I tell you what, they certainly closed down all around that area. The last time.
Well, you were right here. You were at the Rayburn House
Office
Building.
Yeah, I was.
Which is just maybe 100 or 200 yards from where the guy landed.
Yeah.
He could have dropped you a note on the way over.
You know, the last time I was here, it was the weekend Osama bin Laden got killed. And, you know, here we are in Washington, D.C. again.
You're a harbinger of big stories, Ann.
I don't know about that,
Where
Jim.
She goes, news is committed, folks. So if she walks into your business in Greenwood, it probably means that you just won the lottery.
There you go. Wouldn't that be nice? We're going to have the lottery girls on next week. So
oh, very good.
South
very
Carolina good. Lottery. Yeah. So, yeah. So when you talk about immigration, what do you think the issues are?
I think the issue about immigration is that it's not about immigration. It's about whether the law is enforced. The issue is not who comes in, which is a subject that can be discussed and decided. The point is who decides, and the The government of this country should decide through its elected representatives and not with an open border so that everybody and his uncle who decides to stroll in can stroll in. It's against the law. There is something inherently hypocritical about people who come here for the benefits of this country, and in doing so, they make as their first act the violation of the very laws that make this a prosperous, stable, and free society. We need a fence, and I mean a real fence, from Brownsville, Texas to San Diego, to decide who gets in. Now, once we have control of that border, if that ever happens, then we can decide, do we need guest workers or what have you? I'm happy to have that discussion, but that's a separate discussion from what we're having now. The current discussion is about whether the law is going to be enforced or not.
Well, we have laws on the books.
We have plenty of laws. I doubt that you need many additional laws. What you need are people willing to enforce the law, that is to say, to do their jobs, Eric Holder.
He's still around, yes. And then, of course, the Border Patrol, and, you know, already we're hearing that there's going to be more kids coming across this summer.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. And again, the viewpoint of the administration is, well, so what? You know, because they know full well that some of these people wind up voting, and they know that the odds are that they'll vote for Democrats. And to let the laws of this country be broken for partisan advantage is about as low as you can get. It ought to be an impeachable offense.
Well, there's several things, really, that would come under impeachable defense.
There are quite a few.
Yes.
And at this stage of the game, none of them will be invoked for that purpose, but the legal basis for them is there. So that's the main thing about immigration, that this battle is not about immigration, not yet, and it can't be until we finally get control of the border. It doesn't matter if you pass a weak immigration law or a strong immigration law if you don't enforce it. What difference does it make?
Well, that's what Hillary said. What difference does it make?
Yes. Well, a poor choice of words on my part. But nonetheless, the point is still accurate.
Exactly.
In my case, it doesn't really make any difference. In her case, it should have made a lot of difference.
Exactly. But as far as getting the border, I don't think we're ever going to get there. Do you? I don't care whether it's Republican or Democratic president.
Well, if we elect a Republican president in 2016 and keep the Congress as it is, we have a good chance to do that. I mean, there's no reason why you can't. In fact, that'd put a lot of people to work building that border fence. And it should be built. I mean, every country on the planet is aware of the fact that a sovereign nation has the right to decide who gets in. Contrary to what a few vacuum heads out there may think, no one has the right to enter another country without that country's permission. Nobody, anywhere on the planet.
Right. I agree. So why is it such a difficult issue?
Because there's a huge partisan advantage to a lot of people in this country to let in people illegally and to use those people as political cannon fodder to, in some cases, get them actually voting illegally. Plus, you have an awful lot of people who just, frankly, don't care about the laws of the country. They believe that, hey, we're the United States. We've got the Statue of Liberty. Everybody should come waltzing in. Well, I'm sorry, the Statue of Liberty and its inscription on its base, it's just a statue. And frankly, giving us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, to be perfectly blunt about it, we're pretty much up to our backside in huddled masses. And the mere notion of wanting to improve your economic lot is not a good enough reason anymore. Economic refugees, not really. Political refugees, a different story. Even there, you've got to draw a line. I mean, let's face it, our immigration laws originally were set up to fuel a burgeoning industrial machine to settle the West. We needed a lot of people. We got 315 million people now. We don't need a lot of people. And that's the whole basis for any rational immigration law. Does it benefit the nation in question? And people may ask, well, what about the ones who want to come here? To which I would reply, what about them? That's not our responsibility. If we want them here, we'll let them know.
That's right. I could agree with you more, Jim.
And in many cases, we do. I mean, people, for example, with advanced degrees, we have a great need, given the fact so few Americans seem to want to study advanced science and engineering courses. I mean, if we didn't have foreign students in our graduate schools of science and engineering, some of them would be empty. We need to cut the red tape and let a lot of those people in. This is not an anti-immigration viewpoint. This is an anti-illegal immigration viewpoint, something that seems to be lost on too many people.
Well, it has to do with the economy, right? Has to do with
to a great extent. I mean, there's no question about the fact that a rational immigration law would open up or close down the flow of immigrants based on what we need.
Right.
And that should be the only basis on what we need. We are not the dumping ground for Mexico's unemployment problem, although we've been trying to be that.
Well, just for the record, you can't just go over there to Mexico, can you? And just...
Oh, are you kidding me? Let me give you some of the laws in Mexico. If you aid somebody, if you enter Mexico illegally, you can go to prison. If you aid, you're a Mexican, you aid someone going to Mexico illegally, you go to prison. If you go to Mexico to live, you can never be a voter. You can only own certain pieces of property in conjunction with a Mexican citizen. Their law on immigration, which was passed in April of 2000, the general law on population, passed in April of 2000, is so restrictive that if it were proposed in the U.S. Congress, oh, the Democrats would scream, oh, how utterly unfair and vicious it is. Well, I'm sorry, Mexico is simply looking after Mexican interests.
Exactly.
And I don't begrudge them that. I begrudge them printing comic books up to show people how to break into this country illegally. But in terms of how they decide who gets in and the like, hey, that's their business, but it's our business to decide who gets into this country.
That's right. That's right. Well, good points there, Jim. Now, Bob Schieffer's getting ready to leave.
Yeah,
well, you
this
know,
summer.
You've been the voice sometimes on Sunday morning.
Some
yes.
9 years I did that, yeah. It's interesting. Bob, I don't know when his birthday is, but Bob this year turned 78. I don't know this for a fact, but I'll share with you that I have heard he's had some health issues of late. I don't know how serious they are, but I have heard that from someone I trust to be in the know. And given the fact that he's cutting short his career right at the beginning of a very crucial presidential campaign, it makes me think that there is some urgency to this. He almost quit after the 08 election, a big election, an open election. And then was persuaded to stay on. If he were retiring, let's say, in January of 2017, after the election is over, that would be one thing. But to retire just as this election is getting underway, I'm very curious about that.
Very curious, yeah. So, but it's just, what were you talking? He was one of the last of the living legends.
Oh, well, I mean, he remembered Ed Murrow. He remembered Eric Severide. He worked with Eric Severide. Severide had used, when he wrote his commentaries for CBS, Severide had an interesting way of trying them out.
Okay.
He would go to the men's room, and if somebody was in there, he would say, you know, Bob, I've been thinking such and such and so and so, and he would just start reciting his
piece.
Commentary, yeah, as if it just had occurred to him.
Right?
Yeah, an interesting character. But Bob is the last link with what many consider the golden age of broadcast journalism, so I wish him well and a long and happy retirement. I'll miss him.
That's right, because it just won't be, doesn't seem like it could be Sunday morning without Bob
Well,
that,
really, it really doesn't. John Dickerson, I know John, just saw him this morning. I broadcast out of the CBS Bureau.
Yeah.
And he'll do a fine job as the replacement, but nobody will truly replace Bob Schieffer.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So, you know, seeing how we've gone into a little politics here, mm-hmm. kind of,
sure.
Hillary, of course, is on the docket now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that she is the overwhelming favorite for the Democratic nomination. No one else is even making an effort yet. I mean, the people, Joe Biden hasn't even started to do anything. He still says, well, maybe I'll do something this summer. Are you kidding me? The money will be locked up. The good operatives will be locked up. Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland is running. Former Senator Jim Webb of Virginia is running. O'Malley's a former governor. Those two are a bug spot on the windshield of the Hillary Express. She's going to get the nomination. The presidency? I don't think so.
You don't think so?
We don't tend to elect people of the same party after a two-term presidency. Nixon couldn't be Eisenhower's third term. McCain couldn't be W's third term. Gore couldn't be Clinton's third term. And I don't think Hillary can be Obama's third term. H.W. was the only person who pulled it off. He was Reagan's third term because Reagan was that popular.
Yeah. But the interesting spoof, though, that they did on Saturday Night Live, yes, with Bill back in the White House.
Oh, yeah, Errol Hammond, brilliant.
Can you just imagine if he was back there?
Well, the first spouse, you can say, see a summit meeting, let's say the G8 nations, and of course all the presidents are huddled around talking about major issues of the day, and all the spouses are off doing something social. Bill and a room full of women.
Yeah, well, you can see that, huh?
It boggles the imagination, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Hi, I'm Bill Clinton, yes, sure.
And you said you met Bill Clinton.
I have met Bill. I have shaken his hand in a reception line, and I can tell you, he's good. I mean, I consider him, along with Reagan and Franklin Roosevelt, the three political geniuses of America's 20th century politics. And when he grabs that hand, good, firm handshake, and looks you square in the eye like you are the most important person on the planet, as I say, Clinton's good.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it.
All right. So is that a positive or a negative for Hillary?
Boy, that's a really good question. The original bill, a huge positive.
Okay.
The bill that ran in 08 and wound up getting accused in South Carolina of racism, not so much. Which bill is going to be out there, and how much will Hillary use him? Many say Al Gore would have won had he used Bill Clinton more in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see how Hillary can possibly keep Bill off the campaign trail. But, I mean, he's a much better campaigner than she is. I think she has to use him.
Right. Well, I mean, they are a couple.
Officially.
Officially. There you go.
They're a couple in the same sense that Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt were a couple.
Okay.
They're a partnership.
A partnership. Yeah. Maybe that's a better word.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on the Republican side, though, how do you see that shaping up here?
Oh, well, gee, you got three freshman senators, of course, already in the mix. Ted Cruz of Texas, Rand Paul of Kentucky, Marco Rubio of Florida. And you're going to see a lot more people. Scott Walker will get in. Jeb Bush will get in. Chris Christie will get in. You could easily have 9 or 10, maybe even 12 Republicans running. It'll be very interesting. Lindsey Graham, I'm told, is going to be running, although
yes,
currently he's polling fourth in South Carolina. That does not bode well for Lindsey.
Wait a minute. Yesterday afternoon he told me he had the support of South Carolina.
Well, not according to the latest poll.
Well, that's what he told me, and he said he's probably going to run.
I am not an anti-Lindsey person. I think he's a good man, but speaking politically, if you are running fourth in your home state, that's not a good sign.
Maybe he didn't get that poll, Jim.
He got it, trust me. He can recite the numbers verbatim.
Verbatim. Yeah. Well, you know, those are some of the issues, but what do you think about what we're doing with Cuba?
Well,
or what the president's doing with Cuba. Maybe we better say it that way.
I don't care for the approach. I know that people have said, well, the embargo was a failure. Let's not forget why it was a failure. It was a failure because our whore allies refused to enforce it, or we could have, in fact, deposed the brutal Castro dictatorship decades ago. We did not. Given the fact that the rest of the world was not going to support us in that regard, I'm willing to see what we can do, but basically we are propping up a dictatorship. It's a dictatorship like China and Vietnam have, in which they're loosening up things on capitalism, but politically they're still very repressive. And the real answer for Cuba is to get rid of the Castros, and we're doing everything in our power to see to it that Raul stays around. I don't
think
that's the best policy we could have, no.
And then, of course, there's Iran.
Oh, that nuclear deal. Yeah, I mean, we are so, apparently, this administration is so desperate to get an oak leaf cluster for Obama's Nobel Peace Prize, I think they would sign any deal. Although it's interesting to note that after they had already agreed to the outline of a deal that even France, found to be too weak, that the Iranians promptly kicked sand in our face and said, well, the deal, as we read it, means the sanctions end at day one instead of after the completion of several steps. So Iran, I think, is trying to get even more concessions out of this administration. And I'm not sure just how far we can grovel. I guess we'll find out.
Yes. What do you think about with what Congress and the Senate wants to do, Congress particularly, with the sanctions and having a role in looking this
over?
Well,
they have a role.
I mean,
for Pete's sake,
does it matter?
A treaty, a treaty is defined in the Constitution. And if you were to ask the founding fathers, bring them forward in a time machine, describe what was at stake and say, is that what you meant by a treaty? They would say, well, of course it's a treaty, you idiot. What do you think is a treaty? Obviously it's a treaty.
Yes.
And the whole notion that that minor agreements don't fall under that category, and therefore the president can do his usual make it up as you go along thing and okay this without congressional backing, that's nonsense. This is a treaty, plain and simple, and it should have to have the advice and consent of the Senate as prescribed in the Constitution.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So are we going to be better off moving forward? Is there a future here? I mean, you know, everybody goes, oh, yeah, we can survive this.
A future, what, you mean
future
in the country?
The country.
Well, sure. I mean, we're going in the wrong direction. Nothing is it's pushing us over the cliff quite yet. There's plenty of time to turn things around. It would be nice if we did it pretty soon, just in terms of fiscal irresponsibility. I'm not sure how many more decades we can go piling onto the national debt. I mean, the Obama's talking about how he's cut the level of deficits by two-thirds. Yeah, that's because he started out with monster deficits, and now he's adding to the debt somewhat less than that. But let's not forget that most of the indebtedness, a huge chunk of the indebtedness, that we have in this country was added during his administration, about as much as was added during the entire previous 43 administrations.
But if what about the amnesty, though, Jim, if that goes through?
Amnesty
For the immigrants, his amnesty that's in the courts right now.
Well, again, I don't think he's got the power to do that, but...
But the benefits that they'll reap out of this.
Of benefits that they'll get. It's rewarding illegality. And if anybody out there thinks that doesn't mean that we are encouraging more people to come here illegally and break our laws, then they're either lying or they're just not very well informed.
Yeah. Well, I had somebody on yesterday that was talking about the actual costs and how much this is all going to cost if we start giving out all the benefits to the illegals. And it is staggering.
Oh, it's going to cost a ton. Well, that's okay.
Sure.
I mean, nothing this administration has done that doesn't meet their muster in terms of cost. I mean, what does that matter? It's only the taxpayers. And besides that, even we taxpayers aren't paying it. No, it's our grandkids and our kids who are going to be paying for it because it'll just go on the gross national credit card. So
yeah.
I mean, it'll help push us another few inches toward going over the cliff in terms of being a bankrupt nation. No, that was being sarcastic on my part. Obviously, it does matter, but not to this administration, and not, unfortunately, to a lot of voters.
And do you think that we can survive two more years or year and a half, whatever it is that we're at now?
I don't think there's anything that this administration or any other administration can do to destroy us in 2 years. We will be somewhat weaker than we were, but we'll survive. But this is getting to be one of those choices that matters. 8 more years, if we were to go 8 more years down the same path, then your question becomes a much better one. At some point, we have to turn things around.
Absolutely. Well, on the Republican side, anybody that you kind of like or you think might be a good choice?
I think we have a good collection of candidates. I really do. There are hardly any that I would say disallow out of hand. I'm amazed at the complete about-face that Rand Paul has made on a number of issues. My goodness, this guy is a libertarian. He's against abortion. He's against gay marriage. He's against legal marijuana. He's for a much bigger defense budget. I mean, those are four areas just off the top of my head, and there are more.
Right.
Where he has made a 180-degree turn in a direction that is calculated to make Republican primary voters like him more. I mean, I saw the interview where he got called on that by Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. She was right, and he was wrong. He has made major flip-flops, and I can't believe he thinks that nobody's going to challenge him on this. If the press doesn't, I'll guarantee you his competitors for that Republican nomination are going to.
Sure.
I'll grant you that most of the changes he's made would probably make him more palatable to the Republican electorate, and for that matter to me, if he is less of a pacifist. I'm not sure when George McGovern's foreign policy became a conservative value. But to make that kind of change in what appears to be an unprincipled pandering to the Republican primary electorate, he's got to answer for that. I mean, maybe he just really had a massive change of heart about all these subjects, but he has to explain
overnight.
Pretty much. He's got to explain it. He's got to explain it. Yeah, I mean, if somebody changes on one issue, maybe two, but he's changed on too many. I mean, if, for example, if you're part of his libertarian base right now, you've got to ask yourself,
who is this guy?
Who is this guy, and do I want to support him? I can't imagine a true blue, dyed-in-the-wool libertarian now saying that Rand Paul is their guy, because he's just done such total changes on issues that are very important to libertarians.
Absolutely. I wonder what his dad's thinking.
I have to wonder. His father, of course, a man manifestly unqualified to be president, a man who actually said of the Taliban, "Why can't we just get along with them?" He really said that. Ron Paul is, and I will just flat out say it, is not Ann Eller, it's me, Jim Bohannon. Ron Paul is an idiot, and I would be 30 times as credible as a president of the United States than Ron Paul. His son Rand, I don't know. I mean, he must be wondering. Maybe he's talked it. Maybe he told his son, Ron, if you want to be president, you're going to have to abandon my
policy.
These
are things you're not going to be able to say.
But I think his father, I think Ron is a true believer. And Rand, Rand seems to have a great versatility of conviction. That's the nice way to put it.
Okay. You know, I actually thought when they were talking about Savannah Guthrie and the interview and everything and his attack on women and yada yada, I thought, well, is it, or is it just the fact that he was a doctor, a physician, and they're always right?
I don't know. I mean, doctors can tend to be that way, I suppose, but... As I say, I the fact that he's a doctor is of no concern to me. I mean,
no, but they kind of have that attitude sometimes. I'm right. And,
many,
you know.
Many do, but it's one they should probably put aside if they're thinking of elective office.
Maybe, but that's why I was thinking maybe some of that was coming from on his part.
Yes.
No. Let me explain. No. I want to explain this to you now.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Be quiet and let me talk.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, listen, Jim Bohannon, you know what? It has been so long since we've sat down to talk. It sure is good to have you here on the air with us today.
Well, thank you. It's a great pleasure, Anne, and I hope you have a wonderful visit to the nation's capital.
Well, we always do, and it's always great because you're here.
Well, you're so sweet. Thank you. And that we brought out the cherry blossoms just for you.
I'm telling you, it's pretty impressive.
Oh, it's the least I could do.
Well, thank you very much, Jim Bohannon.
I did it all myself.
You are such a guy.
I know.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thanks, Anne.
All right.